This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
Halfway home on a very eventful Friday show here on Ben and Woods this morning. I'm Woodsy. That's Paul Reindel, the executive producer and imaging director. Ben Higgins, your friendly neighborhood sports anchor, joins us as well. I wonder if our next guest was actually in the house last night.
Ooh, that would be fun.
I feel like he might have been, but I could just be talking.
Nodding. He's nodding yes.
Oh yes.
Come on, John, dude.
His YouTube name, number one, John Kenzie Noel fan. Well, who doesn't like Big Christmas? As we are joined right now by Jordan Schusterman from Cespedes Family Barbecue and Yahoo Sports. I mean, if you were anywhere in the neighborhood of Progressive Field last night, sounds like the party might still be going on, Jordan. What an absolutely incredible baseball game.
I mean, reportedly they're going to play again in a few hours, and I don't totally like understand how anyone involved is supposed to do that. But that is, of course, that's just the sport that we love and cherish. Guys, yeah, this was the best game I've ever seen. I mean, it's not really my place to declare where this ranks in, you know, postseason history, because I've only seen so many games and I've only, you know, been lucky enough to work in this industry for so many years. And ultimately, you know, how it will be remembered will be determined in the coming days and weeks. However, the amount of absurd things that happened after the seventh inning is difficult to like truly wrap my mind around. I mean, I did my best to capture it in what I wrote for Yahoo, and I left out so many things. It's kind of hilarious.
It really was a staggering, staggering game. I went to my computer. I was looking at the live bet action, and it said it was like 3-1 at the time, and it said Yankees win the game plus 620. I was like, ooh, that's pretty decent odds. I mean, it's the New York Yankees. And then I thought, well, it's Emmanuel Clase. He's coming in. He's probably going to mow these guys down. Judge has not been hitting that well. Feels like he matches up really well with Stanton. So I'm like, I'll just wait. I'm not going to do anything. So I didn't. And I'm glad I didn't, because I would have been livid, you know, a live bet in the middle of a game, Jordan. What are you seeing out of Emmanuel Clase, other than he is human and worked a ton this year?
Yeah, man. I mean, I've been living in, moved to Northeast Ohio earlier this summer, and I watched a ton of Clase and wrote a long feature about him at the end of August, just about the historic season he's having, was having in the regular season. And it's just incredible. It's amazing that he had never allowed two home runs in a game. And what had happened to him against Detroit was shocking enough on its own, but he had rebounded from that. He looked like Clase again. And, you know, when he does it to Kerry Carpenter, God bless Kerry Carpenter, and he's very great against, you know, right-handed pitching, that's shocking. And because, of course, you know, Clase had been got so infrequently, and especially good against lefties. When Judge and Stan do it, on the one hand, you're like, of course. But on the other hand, it's like, there's no way Clase could possibly implode again in this same spot.
Right.
It was mind-blowing. And Judge is, both of them, wow, right? But Stanton, what a postseason performer. And somehow that home run is going to get lost. I mean, all these moments at the end of this game, you just keep running through it, and you just can't believe all these things happen in the same game.
Well, no question, Jordan. Talking to Jordan Schusterman from Cespedes Family Barbecue this morning, and so you tied the game, you know, and you're feeling you come back and you tie the game if you're the Guardians, but you're like, all right, well, we've tied the game. That's great, but we still have to play extra innings against the New York Yankees. We still have to figure out how to get some of these guys out. And Andrés Giménez, with one of the greatest plays I have ever seen, backed up by Josh Naylor with one of the greatest picks and stretches I have ever seen in my whole life.
Yeah, Giménez is a fascinating player. I think, you know, Vogt said after the game, he's the best infielder on the planet. And your first instinct when you hear that is, why is he playing second base? And then your second instinct, if you've watched him, is, I'm so glad he's playing second base. Could he play a good shortstop? Probably. Brian Rocchio is a pretty darn good shortstop as well. But what Jimenez is able to do, I mean, he is amazing, and he is probably going to win his third Gold Glove here in a couple of weeks. But that play was just, it was sensational, because to your point, that Noel home run is so breathtaking, and then you got to keep playing. And it's just like, and there's no automatic runner. So you're wondering, you know, base runners then become even more. I think this was our first extra inning game of the postseason, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And we hadn't seen, I almost forget every time now when it's like, wait a minute, there's no one out there on second base. They got to earn this run. And so it was really, really, really something. That play was really special.
But of all the unlikely and amazing things that happened, I mean, it is the Noel home run that stands out even from the rest of it, right, Jordan? I mean, how little confidence did everybody have in that situation with Noel coming to the plate? I don't think people realize how cold he was.
But that is the incredible thing about him, because to your point, everything that we've seen over the last month plus has been that he is a rookie in the harshest form of regression, being overmatched. The pitchers had figured out he will swing at these pitches. We can get him out of these pitches. And yet, having been in the press box for so many of these unproductive at-bats, pinch hits, starts where he goes 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts, you look at the guy, and because of what he did for the first 2 months, every time he's coming up there and you're like, maybe this is the time he hits the ball to the moon. Like, we've all been saying it since his last home run. And so, yes, with the way Weaver had been throwing, you still assume it, the, you know, the odds are against him. At the same time, as soon as he hits it, you're like, duh.
Yeah, of course.
Well, you tweeted it, though. He was hitting, he had 113 with a 175 on base percentage and 189 slugging percentage for the final month of the regular season. Wow. And was 1-for-15 in the playoffs.
He was bad. He was bad. And they horrible. Kept running him out there. And that speaks to, I mean, honestly, just the roster that the Guardians are working with,
right,
where they're in a situation where it has continuously been worth trying to keep putting Noel out there and keep giving him a chance to give them that one big swing. And then finally it happened. And obviously Weaver, I mean, it was that's not the pitch he wanted to throw. But hey, most of this game is capitalizing on mistakes. And then they absolutely did that.
It's so true too. Cause you watch that pitch that Weaver threw and you're like, man, with as badly as this guy's been swinging, why would you throw anything near? Yeah. The heart of the plate. Same thing with Clase and Giancarlo Stanton. He had been throwing him heaters up and in, and he's swinging through them and fouling them off. And what do? You hang a slider. The one pitch he can handle, the only one that he can do damage on, you hang a slider. It seems so elementary, but you're in the moment, and you're Emmanuel Clase, and you're like, yeah, but you haven't seen my slider. And, you know, it's like, it's just, it's the beauty of this game. It's also, you know, if you're Stephen Vogt in that moment, you're like, why would you throw him the one pitch he can hit out? It's just, it's never boring, this game, man. Never.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the execution, right? And you think about, again, it's like, there's so many things you can pick out, but you think about the fact that Clase comes in the only exact spot you would want him to handle, and it's a disaster. And we get to to extras, who's leading off the 10th? It's Aaron Judge. Who do we have left? Former Padre Pedro Avila.
Right.
And here comes Pedro Avila.
That we cast aside. Yeah.
Who we cast aside in April and succeeded in low leverage long relief for San Diego and did it all year for Cleveland. But they're not putting him into these spots. And I know Vogt says after the game, oh, we've put all of our guys in these situations. And that's true. That's true to some degree. Right. But come on. Right. And Pedro Avila has become beloved in this clubhouse because it is a very important role. But this isn't plan A, obviously. And yet, what does he do? He goes out there and strikes out Aaron Judge to lead off the
insane.
And you're just like, all right, well, at this point, why do we analyze anything? and I kind of say this at the start of every October, is like, what's the point? Why am I supposed to tell you, oh, this, these are the matchups that
right.
are going to defend? No, what?
We don't know.
This game, we had so far lost the plot, you know, after the seventh, that at that point, really anything could happen.
Talking to Jordan Schusterman from Yahoo Sports and his family barbecue. And Jordan, obviously, even a week later, we're still kind of in mourning.
Reeling.
I mean, you know, can't hurt much more than being up 2-1 against your bitter rival, losing it, and watching said bitter rival look like they are now on a unstoppable march toward a World Series title. And looking at this Mets series and going, I mean, I know it's sour grapes, but Padres could have handled these Mets pretty easily, I think. It's like nothing is soothing the wound from last week. What was your perspective on just how the Padres stunningly went out with no runs in the last two-plus games?
One of the most difficult things about our job in October is we really don't have time to process when teams are eliminated. And I hate that because I have so many Padres thoughts, and I appreciate you asking me for them, because this, I believed in this team. I thought this team, and I think a lot of smart baseball people were like, yeah, this is it. And sometimes you go cold and sometimes you're eliminated. It sucks. And Jake and I had a hearty debate on our show about, was this a successful season or not? Right. And I we kind of went back and forth about when I said, you know, compared to what we were thinking in March, absolutely. But over the course of the year, the expectations were raised because they got better players and they were playing so well, and they looked like a complete team going into October. But as we know, that doesn't guarantee you anything. And that's how we end up where we are today. What I'm wondering for you guys is, obviously, you are not going to enjoy the Dodgers going on. And because, right, the easy thing is, okay, could it be the Mets, right? Tell me I'm crazy. Like, tell me I'm a complete idiot, right? But, like, if the Dodgers steamroll all the way to the World Series, does that make it better or worse? Like, worse. Obviously, you're going to hate seeing the Dodgers.
Normally, I'm the old, yeah, go ahead and cheer for the team that knocked you out.
Yeah, forget it.
But this year, it absolutely makes it worse. It just shows you.
Just making sure.
That this should have been you and not them. You had it. You were there.
Okay. That's fair.
And you let it slip away. This was the team. We've never had a team, at least in my lifetime, where I felt like they actually could be the favorites, or at least, you know, as equal of any team to win it. Even when they made the World Series in 1998, we knew the Yankees were far and away the best team, you know, in the postseason that year. This was actually a Padres team that I looked at every other team in baseball and go, there are other good teams, but I don't see a team that's necessarily better than the Padres. Yeah. And now that the Dodgers are doing what they're doing, I go, if they were the team, if someone was going to take out the Dodgers there, it was going to be the Padres.
Ah. Yeah. Yeah. And that's how I'm feeling watching both New York and Cleveland. And maybe the Mets have a last gasp in here, but assuming the Dodgers move on, New York and Cleveland are going to have to clean it up pretty big time if they're going to have any chance to slow down what this Dodgers lineup has been. This is with a hobbled or not playing Freddie Freeman, right? In some ways, we're still not even seeing them at full capacity. But as much as you guys hate to hear it, this is kind of what I've been saying for 6 weeks. Like, there's a version of this team that's just going to be too much to slow down.
Yeah, it's next level. I thought about you when we went 24 scoreless innings. I thought, man, this is what Jordan went through, but for like 130 games watching the Mariners.
Hey,
like I that's
extreme. Do they go scoreless for 130 straight games, or did it just seem like it, Jordan?
It seemed like it, right? And I thought to myself, oh, so this is what offensive futility looks like. And you had to watch an entire season of that.
Yeah, I will say the Mariners have had a lot of versions of that. Also, notably, not scoring in 18 innings
in their
lone home postseason game two years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one game. That's, you know, how long Seattle had been waiting to have postseason baseball, and they got zero runs in 18 innings in one day. That's pretty special. But
that's Mariners.
We're not compared. It's all painful. This doesn't make anything better or worse. It's all.
Well, we're all here for each other. So it was a rough one, man. Still getting over it, but life goes on.
Indeed. But hey, I'll be back there tonight for Game 4, and nice. I'll just say this because I'm tweeting about some of the pitcher usage here in a couple of minutes. Who's pitching? I mean, Luis Hill against Gavin Williams. None of these guys have pitched in weeks.
Gavin Williams. This is a weird matchup.
This is a war of attrition with
weary bullpens behind them.
Right. What does that look like? Who is available to pitch? Would the Yankees actually roll Weaver and Holmes back out there again tonight? It seems impossible, well, you got to get through nine innings somehow, let alone what the heck would happen tomorrow. I know they'd have Rodon for game five, but man, oh man. I mean, we are guaranteed that game five now. So
yeah, we are.
This is going to be pretty massive.
I think the Guardians are looking forward to a maximum chaos game. Give them a chance to tie the series here. Hey, and at least
I agree, but I wouldn't mind a little bit more of a straightforward contest.
Yeah, same.
The press box was in shambles last night on multiple occasions.
Oh, those writers, when you have reversals like that, because they're writing their story as it goes, and then they got to throw out that story and write, oh, the Yankees win on incredible back-to-back home runs, and then they got to throw it out again and restart. I mean, yeah, they were probably...
Well, let's be clear. No complaints. This is not woe is me whatsoever. I'm just saying it truly was like hilarious the degree to which everyone was just looking around like, what the hell am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah.
Like,
why don't you just wait? Just wait.
You can't.
I know. Really you can't. You got deadlines, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you just wait.
Jordan, it's been fun. We got the World Series. Should be starting next Friday unless all these series wrap up really quickly, and then it could still start on Tuesday, but I'm assuming next Friday. So probably Jake next week, but looking forward to wrapping up the season with you in a couple of weeks.
Appreciate you guys. Always fun.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, man. That is Jordan Schusterman from Cespedes Family Barbecue. Our weekly segment, as always, brought to you by our friends at Grand Ole Barbecue, North Park, Flint Springs, at the ballpark next season when we go back to Petco Park. But don't wait until next season. Make sure you go out and try some of their amazing brisket and other barbecued meats at one of their two locations during the off season.
Yeah, have a meat fest out there. It's delicious.
I know barbecue is kind of summer food, but I actually think it's perfect for the colder months
year round, baby.
It's just like, wow, like warm meat. Very good.
Save that.
No. All right. With our technical difficulties last hour, we did not play Take on Woods. So let's do it when we come back. That means during the break, if you want to get online and be one of our contestants for a chance to win concert tickets, we will play our musical trivia challenge to wrap up the week against Woods coming up next. Phone lines are open. 833-288-0973. 833-288-0973. Take on Woods when we return here with Ben and Woods after traffic on 97.3 The Fan. Potters have some big decisions coming up, not urgent in terms of this offseason. You have to extend players like Michael King and Dylan Cease, but you also don't want to just let them go to free agency
and
necessarily hit the open market. So we'll talk about that coming up. This segment of Ben and Woods brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Buffalo Wild Wings is football, and B-Dub's kicking off football season with two limited-time sauces. Try their new Buffalo Bacon Sauce for bold notes of smoky bacon, or get the fan-favorite hot barbecue before it's gone. Try them at your local B-Dub's, or order now for takeout and delivery with Buffalo Wild Wings. Go! Yeah, we'll talk some Padres again at the bottom of the hour. Right now, though, it is time for a little delayed edition of Take on Woods.
It's time for Take on Woods.
Take on Woods.
Take on
Woods.
All right, you said Mike is our contestant today. Mike, good morning. How are you?
Not good. How are you doing?
All right, Mike. Take on Woods brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. It only takes 15 minutes. You don't have to get out of your car. For directions and discounts, go to SoCalOilChange.com. That's SoCalOilChange.com. I hope you're ready for this, Mike. It's not an easy game. You're going to take on Woods, five questions, musical trivia. If you can beat or tie him, we'll hook you up with some good concert tickets to see Orville Peck at the Calco's Credit Union Open Air Theater on Saturday, October 26th. Tickets remain at Ticketmaster.com. Give you a little advantage. I'll let you pick the category, Mike. Here are your choices. We have on the chessboard, those are all five songs and questions, something to do with a game of chess. Twice as Nice, song titles with the same word repeated twice. Or Round Table, we've got five song titles that include the word round. So, on the chessboard, Twice as Nice, or Round Table. Mike, what would you like to play?
Let's try Round Table.
Round Table. All right, let's give Woods nightmares with a Round Table category. Got five song titles, all include the word round. You'll have 60 seconds. If you don't know one of the answers, you can say pass. We'll come to it if there's still time left at the end of the 60 seconds. First question, Mike, is our two-second song. Paulie's going to play some music. You need to give me the song title, including the word round, and the artist. Two parts to score that point. You understand?
Okay.
All right. He sounds confident. Mike, put 60 seconds on the clock. Category again is roundtable. Your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck. Let's take on Woods.
Round and Round by... Oh.
Ooh, yeah.
Round and Round. Oh, what is that name of that band?
You want to pass?
Come back to it.
Pass.
All right.
Yeah.
England's famous Traffic Circles inspired which 1972 progressive rock classic by the band Yes?
Roundabout.
Correct. The words "like a record" appear in parentheses in the title of which big 1984 hit for the English pop band Dead or Alive?
Oh. Pass.
The debut 2012 single by country artist Kacey Musgrove shares a name with which piece of kids' playground equipment?
Merry-go-round.
Correct. What is the official title of John Tesh's famous NBA on NBC basketball theme that I enjoy so much?
I have no idea.
Oh, time is up, and you did really well, Mike. Hang on the line. You just didn't know the name. Rat is the name of Round and Round's band, but you got Roundabout and you got Merry-Go-Round. You did not get You Spin Me Round Like a Record by Dead or Alive, and you didn't get Round Ball Rock by John Tesh. But two in a tough category is definitely a legitimate score. Let's bring Woods back in. Now, it's much tougher for Woods because he doesn't have the category that Mike had. He's going in cold. We're going to put 60 seconds back on the clock for Woods. Your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck. Let's take on Mike.
Round and Round, Rap.
Correct. England's famous Traffic Circles inspired which 1972 progressive rock classic by the band Yes?
Roundabout.
Correct. The words "like a record" appear in parentheses in the title of which big 1984 hit for the English pop band Dead or Alive?
Spin Me Right Round?
You Spin Me Round. Correct. Yeah. The debut 2012 single by country artist Kacey Musgrove shares a name with which piece of kids' playground equipment?
Merry-Go-Round.
Correct. What's the official title of John Tesh's famous NBA on NBC basketball?
Rock.
Correct. And that is a win. Kind of 4.5 there for Woodsy, but to 2 for Mike. So.
Do you have to let you know it's my beloved Kacey Musgraves.
That's
not
what I said.
Musgrove.
Did I say Musgrove?
No. It's Joe Musgraves.
Joe Musgraves. Kacey Musgraves. Joe
Musgraves. Joe Musgraves. Kacey Musgrove.
I think I just typed it out because I'm so used to typing Musgrove.
Sports lover, man. You can't get away.
Mike, thank you for playing. My fingers have... It's weird.
Well, she just had Tommy John.
Did she?
Yeah.
My fingers... So I was recording last night's sports segment, and I have to put in the final score graphic on the screen. And while I said it all right, Frank, who runs the, you know... the operations in our booth said, "You wrote Dodgers 10, Padres 2."
Oh my
on
God.
The screen. So you better go and change that.
What is happening around here?
Yeah. What in the world?
I just, you know.
Just used to
it. My fingers are just used to writing it. It's like, even though I put the Mets like logo and it was the right picture and everything, I wrote Padres instead. I said Mets, but I wrote Padres.
You're the Adam Klug of Channel 10.
Well, that one didn't
Everybody
actually
clean
go
it up
out.
Around
that
clean
one,
it up!
That one didn't go out over the air. That one was caught beforehand thanks to good colleagues like Frank.
Good job,
last
Frank.
Night at Channel 10. Mike, well played.
Adam needs
did a, not happen for you today.
Adam needs a, like a, what would you call that? Like a fact checker for his tweets, for his... inputting of things into the system. You need like a proxy, not a proxy. Like
you need
what's the word I'm looking for here?
You need another layer of backup.
Like a backup.
A security blanket.
Like a double authentication. Like he submits it and then it goes to somebody else that has to check his
work. A proofreader, as it were.
Yeah, proofreader. Yeah, 100%.
So, anyway, we will come back and talk a little bit more about contract extensions for your San Diego Padres in this offseason. Talked a little about Luis Arraez yesterday, but there are some other candidates to be sure. That is coming up next on 97.3 The Fan. Before we get back to some Padres talk, quick question for Paulie. Paul, as an Aztecs alum and basketball fan, are you offended at all that Brian Dutcher's team was picked to finish fourth in the Mountain West yesterday?
No, I don't care about preseason anything.
They've never been picked to finish worse than first or second.
I saw that.
Brian
I thought
Dutcher
it was interesting.
Era. And they were picked fourth this year. Boise State was picked first. Obviously, you know, they have a lot of players to replace, so there's a lot of unknowns, but I feel like they've earned a little bit of respect and trust. Like, you know what? We don't know how they'll be good, but it's Dutch, it's the Aztecs. They'll undoubtedly be good at the end of the season.
Well, someday, Benny, you're going to appreciate the lack of appearances on power rankings and preseason rankings and things like that. Because I'm telling you, if you're Dutcher, you're like, oh, okay. Like, you don't say it, you know. You don't say it, but you go, oh,
it's motivational.
Okay, sure.
You've ran the conference for like 15 years.
Yes.
I know it's a different roster every single year. There's turnover, blah, blah, blah. Nothing from last year really has any impact on this year.
No question.
And I'm not going to sit here like I am a San Diego State Aztecs basketball fan. I'm not a Mountain West basketball fan.
Yeah.
Can't sit here and tell you, well, I've been scouting, you know, Wyoming.
What Boise State's got.
Like, I don't know anything about the other teams. Maybe there are three or four better teams right now on paper.
On paper.
I have no idea. I just know that San Diego State at the end of the season, they're going to be there.
I'm always.
What is his name?
Magoon Gwoth.
I am just riveted by this
Farrell
player.
Compton's
he actually was the preseason freshman of the year, but I think Magoon Gwoth might
be
better.
What a name! Magoon Gwoth is one of the greatest names of all time.
Yeah.
So I
got Reese Waters coming back.
Yeah,
I'm the first to pile on the Mountain West. It's for the kind of a national joke, but not in basketball.
Not in basketball.
It's a serious basketball conference, and there are good teams. Boise State is good. New Mexico is good.
Since you've gotten me watching regular season SDSU basketball, I continue to remain very impressed with the battles that they have against these teams and the level of talent. You know,
you are getting
good fan bases, good travel.
Yes.
It's a tough conference.
No doubt.
You know, the Aztecs went to the Sweet 16 last year. To be fair, they finished fifth in the Mountain West. You don't really remember that because they went to the Sweet 16, but you know, it was like a five-way tie and they ended up fifth, but technically they finished fifth. So fourth is a step up from last year.
I just don't think it matters that much right now. And if they play Brian Dutcher's brand of basketball and he'll get those guys ready to go, you just have to, I think he's earned, you know, we talked a lot about like that with Mike Schilt down the stretch last year when they were playing so well. And then you did the little skid and you go, guys, have they not earned your trust?
Right.
But you got to have the right players. And
you do.
And
we'll see if they do. Opening game is November 6th against UCSD. They have an exhibition on October 30th against Cal State San Marcos. But it's a new world with the transfer portal. You saw yesterday, Tony Bennett, who was the national championship winning coach at Virginia, different Tony Bennett, just quit like 3 weeks before the season.
He quit.
Retired, technically. Yeah. But one of the best coaches in college basketball, and reportedly the reason is he don't want to deal with the players coming and going and essentially free agency. It's not what he signed
probably
up for.
Probably could have made that decision in like July.
Maybe, but yeah, made it yesterday.
Nothing's changed since like the summer and this week, but no, I'm excited. I don't go to many San Diego State basketball games, maybe the occasional like Saturday 1 p.m. game on CBS, but most of the time they're like Tuesday night, 8:30 p.m. I'm like, I'm not driving down to San Diego State.
In a parking garage that you're going to have to wait to get out of
the game. An hour and a half to get out of the parking garage, but I just got my tickets a couple of days ago.
Fun game to go to,
they
though, with
games,
the fans and the student section.
Oh, yeah.
It's fun to go to those games. There's no doubt about it. So, anyway, quick.
When's the season start?
November 6th.
I can't wait, actually. It gives
UCSD.
Me something to watch during
and then they got Gonzaga coming in, and they got those games in Vegas for the Thanksgiving break that are all against top 25 teams.
The Creighton game that Tuesday.
Nice, dude. That'll be fun.
Yeah, it's gonna be
all right, well, let's check traffic, and then we're going to talk contract extensions for some of your Padres, if any of them actually do get done this coming offseason next year on 97.3 The Fan. So A.J. Preller has painted himself into a bit of a corner, I think, this offseason. We talked yesterday about the fact that, you know, they're right up against the competitive balance tax level even before the season starts, assuming, you know, they offer arbitration to arbitration-eligible players, the normal raises. They're already kind of in a tough spot. Now, if you go out and sign anybody to a long-term contract extension, even if you backload it, remember, the luxury tax is based on the average value. So even if you're only paying a guy $9 million this year, if he's got $15 and $20 million, you know, in future years, that's going to go against this year's CBT level. So signing anybody, including Michael King, Dylan Cease, Luis Arraez, or even Jackson Merrill to a contract extension now could have serious implications on your tax level and tax bracket in 2025. But at the same time, Woods, you sent Juan Soto out to get, you know, Michael King in that deal. You don't really want to just risk letting him walk after another, if he has another great season this year or next year in 2025 and hits open market free agency, he may be beyond the price tag that you can even think about affording. So you kind of have to sign him. Tough spot.
He may be beyond it now. You know, I mean, honestly, like, what's his ARB number going to be next year?
12-13,
which is absolutely doable. And you got to think.
SpotTrack has him estimated at 10.7.
Okay. 10.7. Okay.
So $11 million to keep Michael King.
A bump
King.
Up from 3.1.
Yeah. So a hefty raise and a well deserved.
But still,
raise.
An absolute bargain for a starting pitcher of Michael King's caliber.
29 years old. He turns 30 in May.
Okay.
And I put it on the rundown. I mean, do you just start with a pitcher like Michael King? Do you start in San Diego with the Joe Musgrove?
Give him the
100. Like, is that at least the talking point to start?
I don't think you can get him for less than that right now.
Double his ARB number, his ARB estimate of 10.7. 20 a year. Through 35 years old.
And you don't let him go out and pitch this year on a 1 year $11 million deal unless you want to work out some sort of extension in the middle of the season. But players really don't like to do that.
Joe did.
But for the most part, they're like, I'm either, you know, if you want me here long term, let's talk. And if not, then I'll just pitch this year and hit the open market. And I think, you know, there's something to be said too for players wanting to hit the open market. It's something that they've earned. They've earned the ability to go out and make some real money. And, you know, who's to say that in Michael King doesn't say, okay, I'll accept the ARB number, the $11 million, I'll take it. But what if the Astros throw me $25 million a year, you know, in at the end of next season? If he has another season like he did, why would you settle?
I mean, he may want to hold out for $25 million a year now.
Right.
If he's going to sign a contract extension. You know, price tag go up and... Honestly, projecting forward, as much as we love Joe, Michael King projects a lot better. Younger. You know, on the upward trajectory, he's the kind of pitcher that is probably closer to a $30 million a year pitcher in the near future than a $20 million a year pitcher. So are you ready to invest those kind of significant numbers in Michael King? Because the alternative then is you lose him, and the prize piece that you got for Juan Soto is now gone. So essentially you got a, you know, 2 year rental of Michael King for Juan Soto, which isn't bad, but you'd like to think that there was more to it than just the 2 year rental of Michael King. And we haven't even started going down the Dylan Cease road or a Jackson Merrill contract extension. Things that I would think any team would seriously be considering this offseason. And a Luis Arraez, who we haven't talked about yesterday. Doesn't seem like there's any way you could get all four of those done this offseason.
I don't think so either, man. And again, not knowing what the Padres have to offer, what their plans are, who's actually, you know, making those decisions right now, I have no idea. And, you know, the what you've got left down there of Vasquez, Brito, Waldron. I mean, yeah, you're looking at this right now, and you have Michael King for a year, and you have Dylan Cease for a year. Do you have any problem with just pitching those guys just like you did this year and letting the chips fall where they may?
If you do that, then there are really only two alternatives. You go all in just for 2025.
Right.
And you don't sign anyone to contract extensions, and you use every dollar that you've got to try to load up the 2025 team. But after that, there will be a huge reckoning. If they win the World Series, it's a much more palatable reckoning, but it's still coming. Because if they win the World Series, it's probably because Michael King just had a great year, Dylan Cease had a great year, Luis Arraez had a great year, and Jackson Merrill had another great year. So their price tags all just went through the roof. When you could have gotten them for less if you had done it now. So there'll be a huge reckoning in terms of, man, I wish we had gotten some of those contract extensions done. Or there's the other reckoning where you don't have great seasons. Then what do you do? Now are you willing to invest even more money after a team that didn't perform well? Or are you just doing a total like rebuild around Tatis and Manny and Bogarts? And yeah, Merrill, I would assume you're going to keep as long as possible. But your pitching staff would be... essentially, you know, a very old Yu Darvish and a Joe Musgrove that's coming off Tommy John surgery that you don't know that is also getting older and nothing. I mean, nothing. You won't have pitching in 2026.
Sounds
going
like what
forward.
You're saying is that the future is very bright here in San Diego.
No,
you
I'm saying to... that AJ Preller has put himself into a corner. He's pretty good at painting himself in and out of corners as well.
He certainly painted himself out of one this year. But yeah, it's like Satan's Blowfish said in the chat. Why else would you, you know, it's a mutual decision, but Michael King wanted to be a starter, right? And that's why he wanted to be a starter and learn how to be a very effective starter at the big league level. Why? Because you make more money. You can get paid to do that. But I do think, man, at some point, you got to be okay with guys pitching out their contracts and then letting them go. You know, somebody else pay for a 31-year-old Dylan Cease, 31-year-old Michael King at the time. Not that they're not great, not that you wouldn't want them, but it just has to make sense for the future as well. I'm typically the guy that says, you know, Michael King to me is a guy I'm like, you know what? I invest in Michael King. I do, but not to the tune of $25-30 million a year.
If you're looking to extend your window of competitiveness, I think you really do have to consider trading Dylan Cease this
100%.
Offseason.
I do too.
If you're looking to win the World Series in 2025, you're keeping Dylan Cease,
right.
And you are asking him to shoulder the load next year and try to get you to the World Series. But if you want to extend that window, the best way to do it is to use the money that you trade Dylan Cease, probably add young pitching prospects that you feel good about controlling and joining the rotation in the next few years, and then using the money that you're not paying Dylan Cease in arbitration, which his number is, what, around $18 million we talked about? And using that to try to extend Michael King and or Luis Arraez and Jackson Merrill.
Yeah, and don't forget, A.J. Preller's contract is up as well at some point. After this season, I believe, after 25, right?
AJ has through 26, I think.
Through 26?
I believe so. And who knows? They'll probably give him another extension this year after the year he had.
Yeah.
It's tough. I'm already...
Michael King's value, as Adam points out in the chat, his value could potentially never be higher than it is right now, you know? So...
With a pitcher, the one pressure point you have as an organization when you're dealing with a pitcher is... I could go out and blow out my arm this year.
Correct.
And I have not signed my long-term deal. And you can, if you dangle that money and, you know, they sit in a dark room, you know, at night and, you know, they're tossing and turning in bed and they yell, I probably could get a lot more if I wait for free agency for 1 year, if I have a good season. But what happens if I blow out my arm?
I got it solved in the chat by Nate. Nate says you trade Jake Cronenworth and Wandy Peralta and a minor leaguer for Paul Skeens. There it is. It's all done.
Done.
I love Paul Skeens.
Figured it out.
Why?
It's a great idea.
It's also going to require probably some blackmail pictures of the Pittsburgh general manager as
Bob
well.
Bob Nutting. and Ben Charrington.
Throw in the Leodalis DeVries, Jackson Merrill, and
Nate says it was a joke
Steven
to me.
Sella,
yeah, but it's a deal that I'm doing.
All right, I'll do it.
That's a deal.
All right,
listening
I believe
to
Jake.
This
I believe Nate. It was a joke.
Michael King conversation though, and starting to like play it forward in my head. I find myself battling between going all in for next year. You were this close.
Yeah.
We were talking about it with Jordan. We feel like this could have been our year. And you got to go even further in next year. Does signing King to a 5-year contract prohibit you from going out and getting another starting pitcher? Because we need another starting pitcher next year, not Michael King. Like, he's already on the roster. We need somebody that's not on the roster yet to replace Joe, to pitch in a big playoff game maybe, since we know what happened this year.
Yeah.
Like,
are we all soured on Dylan Cease because of what happened in the playoffs? Is there some recency bias there? Because he was a horse.
He's got ace-like stuff, but I don't know that he's your ace.
But he pitched like an ace during the regular season.
No, he is.
He's an ace.
He throws 200 innings and strikes out 200 batters a year without fail.
Okay, yeah. But when you get to the playoffs, you're number one.
But number two
becomes your number
four.
You
worry about that when you get to the playoffs.
Do you take that, though? Like, knowing full well what you can expect. You know, Manny hasn't performed great in the playoffs, you know, but you want him for that
30-100. You want them all to keep getting chances at it. You'd rather have guys who failed in the playoffs but at least have playoff experience
he's a beast.
Than throwing guys who've never been in there over and over again and hoping it's going to work. Now, Remember, the injury question with Michael King works both ways. You sign him, but are you worried that
correct
his arm could explode at some point? You know, he doesn't have the durability, you know, track record yet of a Dylan Cease. He's a younger pitcher, and he's not gone through all of that.
See,
as far as I know.
I disagree with Kevin here. He says Cease's performance in the postseason is a benefit because it lowers his value. I don't think it does at all.
I don't think so.
I really don't think so. I mean, there are a lot of guys get paid in baseball that have not performed in October. A lot. Aaron Judge has $600 million. You know, I mean,
Clayton Kershaw made plenty of money.
My point is, to get to October, though, you have to go out and sign another frontline starting pitcher.
Not necessarily frontline.
If you keep
Cease, King, Darvish.
We talked about some of the names yesterday.
Yeah.
They don't need to sign Corbin Burns necessarily. They can. There's names out there to add to the rotation for this year. Anyway, a lot of things that AJ Preller needs to be working on, and I'm sure he is. Come back with the Rundle Report next.